Rat, my terrible terrier, has started this morning's podcast off for us. And he's rather bemused because it's very, very early morning. And we have hopped in the car and popped down just off the coast of Suffolk to Aldborough. It's just under an hour's drive from High Ash Farm. And I've had a telephone call from one of the members of the Suffolk Wildlife Trust who likes to keep me informed as to the arrival of one of our migrant bird species, the swift. And whilst I'm incredibly fascinated by swifts and probably the most aerial bird in the world, I'm equally fascinated by the relationship between the town of Aldborough and the swifts, because it's quite an ancient town, lots of old buildings, which are okay for swifts to nest in, but there's also been quite a lot of new development and a certain interest in the swifts as well, and it's resulted in the erection of lots of special swift nest boxes, including in the parish church, which is not far from me. It's been chilly and it's a little bit milder in the last few days, and that's resulted in the first wave of swifts coming up to the Suffolk countryside. There's reports of them being right down south at Margate as well and along the southern coast. But Aldborough has a special relationship, as I mentioned, with the swifts, in that the town provides the nest boxes. But if I just walk up the shingle bank here, walk away from the sea just a little bit. Here we go. Quite a steep bank here with sea defences just the other side of the top of the bank, and then several hundred acres of marshland with the River Old sort of skirting through the centre of the marshes, and that provides the ideal habitat for feeding the swifts. You get lots of insects there flying about with the water habitat and the marshland and the grazing marshes, and a little bit further inland, quite a large dairy herd there, and they're milked as well, so providing local cheeses as well. And there's that relationship between humans and the birds, which is what really fascinates me and intrigues me. That's why I've come down, because I want to see my first swift. It's very early in the morning. I should be back at the farm in time for work, but it's always worth it. I've seen lots of swallows going up and down the side of the little dikes that have been dug across the marshland, but suitable habitat for them. Absolutely ideal, and most people miss actually seeing them, and they've done this incredible flight up from South Africa, several thousand miles, not stopping or resting on the way, which makes everybody scratch their head when they hear probably it's the most aerial bird in the world. Specially shaped, it's dusky sort of black feathers, tiny little white patch under the chin where they can fill that with insects that they catch and take back to the females in their nest, either in the nest boxes or natural nest sites under the old pan tiles all around the town, which is just beside me here. So the little white eggs, the female incubates them, and that's about the only time they come to ground, so to speak. Long wings, if they land on the ground, they really have great problem in taking off again because of the shape of the wings. They're long and narrow, kind of sickle shape, and their eyes are kind of sunk in their head like the old early sports cars, and they have very weak legs which are held up in the feathers on the body, and the shape doesn't seem quite right for a bird that spends its entire life flying around, because it's like a torpedo. It's quite blunt at the front and then the bird tapers away, but that's in perfect symmetry with its environment. Actually, the drag as the bird goes through the air is hugely reduced, and so you can learn a lot from the shape of a swift as well. So fascinating birds. And I say that they can collect insects on the wing, which is the only way they feed. They don't come to ground to feed. And this sort of the group of insects that they collect in their beak doesn't get digested by the male. It's collected in what's called a bolus, and he can eject that if he goes back to the nest and feeds the female when, if and when she's incubating. But with the cool weather you sometimes have in May, their average arrival time is about the 15th of May, but you always have a vanguard ahead of that, a few birds arriving and then different waves coming in until the sky in certain places is almost full of them. But there's not so many about as there used to be, certainly in my childhood. The farm area back at High Ash Farm near Norwich there would be absolutely filled with screaming swifts. And it's since I've been growing environmental stewardship crops, things like mustard and fodder radish, which come into flower and attract pollen beetles. The pollen beetles then swarm at certain times of the year in warm weather, which usually coincides the end of May, early June, and that enables the swifts to feed en masse. And suddenly, some of the fields at High Ash Farm are absolutely covered in swarming swifts. It's an amazing sight. How they don't collide with each other, I don't know. But the swifts are just amazing birds. Once you learn about them, it just makes me smile anyway, because they sleep on the wing, they can shut one half of their brain down. People say I do even better than that. But and then they go to sleep and sort of have catnaps while they're flying at night high up. So they drink on the wing and sometimes come to the areas of water at High Ash Farm and on very hot days in June and scoot down and get a beak full of water. And they mate on the wing as well, which is quite amazing to see. And the male will fold his wings almost upright in a V shape and then land on the female's back whilst they're both flying and mate like that. And they're long-lived birds as well. Some swifts are 10, 15 years old, quite normal. And during that time, because they're flying 24/7, apart from when they're nesting and apart from when the young are in the nest, as I said, the most aerial bird in the world. But it's such a lovely sight this morning. It's just beginning to warm up a little bit and my eyes are cast skyward now, just looking for that sickle shape flying about close to the edge of Aldborough here. So I'll wait about and be patient. Many people ask me why or how I got interested in wildlife, and occasionally I give talks about this, explaining a kind of light bulb moment, I suppose you could call it. And that's what really triggered my interest in wildlife, although I was always brought up on the farm. And quite often, Sunday dinner time, lunchtime, in the middle of the day, that was, nearly everything on the farmhouse table cooked by my mum would have been from the farm. That would be pheasants and obviously the milk, some cream. My mum would make butter and cheese as well, and then flour as well. So the whole vegetable patch was certainly in the farm garden, which was walled. There was fruit growing on the walls, espalier trees. My father grew strawberries, gooseberries, raspberries, and then there was an apple orchard as well with bramleys and Cox's orange pippin there and several other older varieties of apples as well. So you got kind of used to food coming from where you lived, and it wasn't transported at all, so you got used to that. And it wasn't until much later on, being a traditional farmer and having the sort of sporting element on the farm as well, where lots of friends and guests would get together and have a shoot through the shooting season on Saturdays. And it was on one of those occasions where I'd organised quite a large shoot. There was about 18 guns on the shoot, and then half a dozen beaters as well, which would go through the woodland beating the bramble bushes to get the pheasants out or the woodcock. And it was at the end of a particular day, quite a long day, Saturday, late Saturday morning, it started and finished about 4 o'clock in the afternoon in early October. We'd had quite a successful shoot, perhaps 20 brace of pheasants, that would be 40 pheasants, a dozen brace of grey partridge and some red leg partridge as well, woodcock, foose snipe, that was all, they're all game birds, as was then, and there was always plenty of them. There'd be hares, rabbits, and anything else as well that could be eaten. And at the end of the shoot, there would always be a vote of thanks given by somebody, and braces of pheasants would be handed out to the beaters as a thank you. That'd be two pheasants each for them, and they'd be quite happy with that because that would be quite a good meal later on in the week. And the rabbits always found a home, and anything else would be sold and help to raise a little bit of money for upkeep of the shoot on the farm. And it was right at the end of this particular shoot that really changed everything and explains perhaps why I'm here and come down to Suffolk. That would have been a mad thing to do 25 years ago, or a bit longer than that, when this huge change happened. And the vote of thanks went ahead as normal, and it was quite an eminent doctor on the shoot, and he turned around and said, I'd like to thank Chris for such a wonderful afternoon's fun. He just used a different word to what would be normal, because we all knew it was sport, and it's quite good sport to, you know, and challenging as well to have a gun and to shoot pheasants on the wing, or partridges in particular, and even harder to shoot woodcock and particularly difficult snipe. So that challenge is there, it's called sort of sport, and it's very, very traditional as well. You always did things in a particular way, and it was regulated by when you can shoot things and when you can't shoot things. But that word, thank you for a wonderful afternoon's fun, made me sort of stop in my tracks. I knew something had happened. I couldn't explain it at the time, and it took a year or 2 years for the sudden change round from shooting for sport to not shooting at all, because the realisation that that relationship between man and the wildlife, because of our behaviour in the 1970s and 80s, when we did all the stubble burning with a box of matches, hedge grubbing and things like that, and you started to realise how difficult it was for some of the species to thrive. And that's why I've come down to Suffolk, because I hugely appreciate the birds migrating up here and how difficult it is for them, because the climate's changing, our attitude to wildlife is changing, not always in a good way, I must say. Modern agriculture is quite a hostile environment for our wildlife to be in, particularly things like hares. Grey partridge is now a red list species, which wasn't there. Woodcock, again, quite a common game bird, or a game one you can shoot for sport, is another red list species. Nobody's rearing, releasing woodcock or snipe, and so there's this conflict that's beginning to happen. So it's a really difficult relationship, because some birds nest out on arable land. Sometimes things like, just trying to think of all the species. Well, yellowhammer's another red list species. Stone curlew will nest out, particularly in sugar beet fields, which some of which are being sprayed with quite a lethal chemical called neonicotinoid, and that can kill all the insects in the field, which is what the skylarks feed on, of course. Although you don't get many wildflowers and bees affected, you certainly have insects in sugar beet fields. And so this huge relationship between modern farming, the need and wish to look after our wildlife, and our modern way of existing, roads which are getting faster and faster. Wildlife find that very difficult with all the species of deer we have out in East Anglia at the moment. So it's a long and difficult story. But in the short, that's why I'm here today. I've learned to make that huge turn. Some people would call me a deserter. I'm certainly not that. I'm as much as a farmer as anybody, any other farmer listening, and more of a sportsman than perhaps you'd really realise, but that's a relationship between food on the table and existing, rather than having that particular word fun for doing something. without thinking about it, and that's a difficult thing. Tradition is such a powerful thing, particularly out in the countryside. So there we are, a little bit of explanation as to why I'm here, but nevertheless, I'll just walk back down this shingle bank. Rat's waiting patiently at the top of the shingle. He thinks we're going for a walk. Well, we might squeeze a short walk in, but just before I finish, just listen to this. It's such a wonderful, relaxing sound. Gentle waves. That one was quite a large one, lapping off the shingle shore. Here at Alderbrough.